Refrain, the same train, full of cocaine, blows the brain. Have you forgotten, I've been through the first term of rotten. The father, the son, and the holy shit, we all in. Don't look at me, I ain't calling for no assassination. I'm just saying, who voted for that asshole of your nation? Deja Bush, crushed by the head rush when I wrote the bum rush. Saw you salute to the then vice pres, who did what Reagan said. And then became pres himself, went for Delph, knee deep in his damn self. Stuck in a three-headed bucket, a trilateral Bush shit. Sorry ain't no better way of putting it. No, you cannot freestyle this, cause your ass still ain't free if I fight for y'all and they get me.
Come on!
How many y'all is coming to get me? None, cause it's easier to forget me. Ain't that a Bush? Son of a Bush is here all up in your zone. You ain't never heard so much soul to the bone, I told y'all when the first Bush was tapping my telephone. Spy versus spy, can't trust them as you salute to the Illuminati. You know what? Take your ass to your 1 million party. Go on! He's the son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad.
The son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad.
The son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
The son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad.
The son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad. Now here's the pitch. High and inside, certified genocide. Ain't that a Bush? Repeat, ain't that a Bush? Out of nowhere, headed to the hothouse. Killed 135 at the last count. Texas bounce. Texas bounce, come on. Cats in a cage, got a ghost of a chance of coming back from your whack. Ass killer machine, son of a Bush, ain't that a son of a Bush? Cats doing bids for the same Bush shit that you did.
The farmer.
Serial killer kid, serial killer kid, go!
He's the son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad.
The son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad.
The son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad.
The father, the son. The father, the son. The father, the son, and the holy priest. The father.
Come on. The father. Coke is the real thing. Used to make you swing. Used to be your thing. Daddy had you under his wing. Son of a Bush. Bringing kilos to fill up silos. You probably sniff piles. Got inmates in Texas scrubbing tiles. That shit is wild. That shit is wild. CIA child.
The father.
That shit is wild. CIA child. That shit is wild. CIA child. That shit is wild. CIA child.
He's the son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad.
The son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad. Son of a bad man.
He's the of a bad man.
Welcome back and Happy New Year. You're listening to La Rage du Peuple, 12 hours of special programming on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. It's just after 3 p.m. We're well into our little New Year's Day marathon. It was freezing rain before, but it's cleared up a bit, just cloudy, wet, slippery too. So in the studio right now, we got me, Jaggy, and Mustafa, and we've been joined by Sarita Ahuja. Hey, Sarita.
Hello, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Sarita is a member of No One's Legal Montreal. She's a member of the Migrant Worker Support Network, but we'll be talking to her a bit later as we talk more about migrant justice struggles, a big theme of our show today. We just talked with Cantonetta. That was that was a pretty interesting interview, Amos.
It was it made you at least look forward to 2007. Cantonetta speaking about the opening of
traditional Confederacy house.
Yeah.
Well, when she mentioned the names, like she named the people who were there back in 1959, who at the time tried to get it open again. That's and you know, she mentioned that there are people who are alive today who were young back then, but alive today who were trying to get in.
Who are very active in the land reclamation,
such as Dick Hill.
Yeah.
And we've been trying all day to reach people at Six Nations. We were hoping to have them on the line, but we were a bit surprised, I guess, to learn about this very historic moment that happened today. So it's really understandable why people there are busy and concentrating on things at Grand River with the reopening of the traditional Confederacy house. But luckily, Cantonetta was able to give us some background to this really important issue in 2006. And as you said, it's a cause for optimism, although I think the struggle continues. There's nothing to be taken for granted, which is one of her major messages, but really a strong note of optimism there.
Yeah, and it comes out, I mean, something like this can only come out because of the struggle that was taken in 2006 to actually say no, no more band council, no more colonial government, that's it, the locks are off, and they've taken power of their own destiny now.
Yeah. Some people might be wondering where Icky is, Icky from Banda de Gaza, and he's on his way. He's promised to be in here before 5:30 to play some live music in studio. So we'll expect him sometime. We have a lot more programming lined up. The issue of Awaka, the popular uprising in Awaka, will take up quite a bit of our time later on in the show. Hoping to have some in-studio guests. We have some recent pre-recorded audio with organizers and activists in Mexico, one of whom is at an undisclosed location because of the repression of activists and organizers in Awaka. We've heard from all over the place, Afghanistan, Lebanon,
Gaza
in the Middle East, the Philippines, India, migrant worker struggles in the United States. And we're going to continue on that theme of migrant worker struggles in the United States right now. I was able to do an interview with Arnaldo Garcia. Arnaldo is a longtime immigrant justice organizer based in Oakland, California. And he's active with the National Network for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. He reflected on the last year of mobilizations, truly historic, the scope, the depth of these mobilizations. So we'll listen to that interview now with Arnaldo. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Sarita about migrant justice struggles here in North America. So we'll turn it over to that interview with Arnaldo. I'm speaking with Arnaldo Garcia, who's on the phone from Oakland, California. Arnaldo is an organizer with the National Network for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. He joins us on La Rage du Peuple. Hello, Arnaldo.
Hello there. Everything's great over here.
Arnaldo, I guess I'll start by asking your assessment of the last year of immigrant justice and immigrant rights mobilizations in the United States. They've been described as historic. This wasn't just about Chicago and L.A. and New York and Houston, but about all kinds of jurisdictions where protesters took to the streets in mass numbers, to the extent to which there was international attention focused on the issue of immigrant justice in the United States. So I'm just wondering if you could share with us, as we finish the year here, your assessment of those mobilizations. Were they truly historic? What went into them? Are we even asking the right questions about these mobilizations?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the mobilizations were truly unprecedented in the history of the U.S. In sheer numbers alone, more than the civil rights, you know, historic civil rights movement, the anti-war movements, the different movements that have taken, they were just unprecedented in numbers and in scope. And you know, it really was the beginning of a dramatic change in the political culture, right? Because it involved the smallest rural communities to the largest, you know, metropolitan centers, where literally millions of people marched, beginning in February, all the way through May, and then a sort of a final smaller burst in the fall of this year of 2006. And I think that the way you can gauge when change is taking place, right, is how the hinterlands, the places that you wouldn't expect any mobilizations to take place, took place. In other words, everybody was discussing what undocumented migrants, having undocumented migrant workers in our means, how to solve it, and how it impacts, you know, the communities. Some things that are not generally known, for example, one us in the U.S. is foreign-born. Here in California, which is the largest recipient of international migration in the U.S., is one out of every four persons is foreign-born. So it has, you know, the impact of immigrants within the culture, within the economy, within every, you know, facet of U.S. life is touched by it. So when you have the millions of people demanding justice and really demanding a new type of citizenship, you know, they're not just demanding guesswork. They're not demanding guest worker programs. They're not demanding, you know, second class citizenship. They're asking for justice. They're demanding their rights. And it really is an amazing process, right? Because you have everybody involved: families, you have elders, you have every imaginable, you know, community group. And everybody was looking for the center. Everybody kept calling us. Everybody kept calling all the groups and saying, "Hey, who's in charge?" And the beauty of it was that everybody was in charge. That it was the grassroots community groups that really took the initiative and the opening in launching this process. And so when you have millions of people in the streets demanding justice, you really have a big impact. And the impact hasn't gone away. There's a certain amount of denial in some of the main, you know, institutionalized, moderate and liberal type immigration advocacy groups about the significance of what happened in 2006. But nobody can deny that there was this, you know, mass mobilization, and it had its own logic, it had its own demands, and that you can't ignore it only at your own peril.
Anardo, anytime we talk about a movement, of course, we're talking about movements, that is, various tendencies, various strains, various ways in which a movement manifests itself. It's not monolithic. And I'm wondering if you can give us a sense of the movements behind the immigrant justice movement in the United States. As an observer of this movement, you know, you see certain trends, such as the emphasis on the fact that a bulk of the people participating in this movement are Mexican, are Latino protesters. Of course, there's a strain to the movement that is very much focused on legislation, maybe tied a bit to the Democratic Party. And then, of course, you have the role of youth, people walking out of schools, asserting slogans and politics that might be significantly different than what some of the NGOs and gatekeepers of the movement might be asserting. So can you give us a sense from where you're at of the movements that are within this movement?
Yeah, if we talk about the immigrant rights movement, right, it does have a left, right, and center. There is a progressive the progressive side of the movement is grassroots based. It does a lot of consultation with community groups, community members about what should be the principles and demands. And on the opposite spectrum, right, you have a lot of groups that have no social base. They're funder driven. They are willingly negotiate and trade off the rights of certain communities in order to advance their own their own budgets and their own causes, and then you have you also have unions and that are involved in the immigrant rights movement, and it's the same thing has happened where there has been a split within some of the unions about how you support. Some of them, for example, are supporting guest worker programs, which is really an abomination, right? If you think about what a union should be doing, protecting the rights and interests of workers, and here you have unions that are willingly to bring in guest workers who really have very little portability in terms of their visas, where they can live and work, and how they can assert their rights, right? Because guest workers, or but a set of workers, are pretty much at the at the behest of the employer if they complain or they get injured or they try to assess their rights. Usually the response is the same, you know, that they get fired and deported. Then you have a very, one of the most amazing things that I saw was, it also shows how deep the movement went, was how family-based it was and youth-based also it was, right? And I'm not just talking university students, university-age students or high school. It cut all the way down to the grade schools and the middle schools and the junior highs and the high schools, they call them here. And also just regular, you know, young workers that were involved in really leading the walkouts, emptying the schools, and really giving a voice to a different type of vision in terms of even though some of the, you know, some of them are not well grounded, it still shows the potential in terms of trying to envision a different relationship between communities within the U.S. and not just within the U.S., between communities in the U.S., but also between the U.S. and abroad, right? Because I think that within the progressive grassroots movement, there is an understanding that it's not going to be a simple matter of just getting legalization that has rights, but that it also involves changing the relationship between the U.S. and other countries so that we start minimizing the impacts and start trying to create stable communities, not just here in the U.S., but abroad as well, in order to create migration to an option, not as an option for survival, but an option to thrive. So you have this really broad movement that takes place, but the bulk of it really is grassroots. It really is demanding legalization with rights. In other words, that it's demanding civil rights, labor rights, and in many cases, you know, just making general call that all human rights be upheld and respected. At the same time, the groups that have more power and access, like to Congress, they use that in order to really distort the messages that are coming from the grassroots about what is being demanded, right, in terms of, because right now what's on the table is this thing called the Hegel-Martinez Compact, which is a type of special registration program. If, for example, if a worker have been here less than 2 years, undocumented worker, they have been here less than 2 years, they're expected to self-deport and go back home. If they've been here from 2 to 5 years, they're expected to self-deport and register at a port of entry at their country of origin. And if they've been here more than 5 years, 5 or more years, they're expected to pay a hefty fine, register and have a background check, and to see if they qualify to register for a guest worker type visa. And if they don't qualify, they would lose, you know, the fine and the back test that they would have paid and be deported. And if they qualify the program, it would take them like 17 years to become a legal, to apply to become a legal permanent resident if they had a clean record, if they never went on you know, social services or welfare benefits and stuff like that. So that they're really offering a different type of criminalization program and expanded guest worker programs under the guise of legalization or what they call comprehensive immigration reform, which has nothing to do with being comprehensive in terms of the rights of the immigrant communities, but comprehensive in terms of synchronizing it with a lot of the prison building complex that already exists within the U.S., and also the militarization that's taking place within the U.S. in terms of law enforcement and immigration control. So you have this movement that's knocking its head against all these different aspects of the social program, the political program of the government and the parties, and also organizations that are impacted by it, but also don't pay attention to it and are trying to impose their own views on it. So it's still not a done deal, right? One of the things that's really uppermost on people's mind is trying to get the kind of reform that communities want. The last several years, the National Network has held a series of community consultations where thousands of individuals, you know, participate in a type of survey where they basically are asked, what type of reform do you want? You know, would you be willing to accept border militarization or deportations or less civil rights or different civil rights in order to get access to stabilizing your stay in the U.S. And most people said no. You know, the majority, overwhelming majority of people in these surveys that we've done, consultations, people are very clear that they want rights, they want their families reunified, they want the border demilitarized, they don't want, you know, they don't want the problem of immigration solved by the police, and that it can be solved in a very rational way where you can address the root causes that are forcing people to migrate internationally. and at the same time have some type of equity here within the U.S., whether it's access to permanent residency or citizenship, but not just access to one thing, which is being offered, right? It's either deportation or guest worker programs. So, and then at the same time, there is a sector of the movement that's saying, well, we don't want the citizenship that's being offered. Look what's happening to citizens right now, citizens that look like us, in other words, citizens of color. You know, who's filling the jails? Who's being pushed out of schools? Who doesn't have access to culture? Who doesn't have access to higher education? You know, who has access to stable wages, wage jobs, living wage jobs, and who doesn't? And what kind of citizens? And a lot of people are, it's like a very, very old story. Well, we don't want to become those kind of citizens. What kind of citizenship is that offers you jails, rules? So people are questioning. There's a lot of questioning and discussion and dialogue that's going on. And then another very big item, an agenda item, I would say, is that the right wing for a number of years has always pitted communities of color against immigrants and immigrants of color. So, like, there's a big, there's a big slogan that says, you know, immigrants take jobs from Americans, and they've refined it to say immigrants take jobs away from African Americans. So it's a really sore point, right, when people are demanding their civil rights, and there's a sector of the African American and Black community in the U.S. that says, well, we don't have civil rights yet, so why should, you know, there's some that are saying, well, get in line or get behind us or us first, right? So it's a really big controversy as well about how, so then it's not just asking for any old civil rights. Right? We have a very large agenda in terms of, okay, legalization is not going to cut it. Just demanding the civil rights that have been stripped away is not going to cut it. So what is going to cut it? So there's a very big dialogue and discussion that's ongoing. Exactly, well, how do we define ourselves? Are we a civil rights movement, or are we a new civil rights movement, which is a really, really has a creates a thorn in people's side, right? Because they say, what happened to the old civil rights movement? And everybody, so there is a lot of questioning about, well, which way do we go forward, and how do we at the same time dialogue and create alliances with different communities? Some of them are citizen-based, but they're in the same exact situation as undocumented workers. And how do we move forward together? So there's a lot of risks that organizations and communities are going to have to take in the next period, and they already began taking them, because the biggest thing that I think blew everybody away is how you could have the majority of a community that's at risk, right, that's undocumented, in the streets openly saying we're undocumented. They took time off from work. They forced different sectors to support them in their walkouts. It was quite an amazing thing to see workers walk out, you know, and then the employer saying, well, we support them, right, because they're our workers. Even though they're still saying that they're our workers, right, but there's still political pressure that it would signify if you had boycotts or changes take place, you know, without these communities. And you're talking about, you know, like I said, one out of every seven persons and in the country, and then that it's affected by this, you know, that affects the other six, then you can't just make a decision that, as has happened consistently, where citizens get to make a decision over a community that can't even vote or be consulted in the official process. So you can't ignore this movement. And a lot of it hasn't disappeared. Let me assure you, people are meeting, people are going through training, people are trying to figure out what do we do next. And there's a lot of planning, there's a lot of meetings, a lot of forums. There has been marches, there's been vigils, there's been protests against the recent raids. There's been all these things that are happening that show that people really know and care about what they want. And anybody that says otherwise, you know, is trying to get away with murder, so to say, right, in terms of ignoring. You can't ignore our communities, and the communities saying you can't ignore us and you can't speak for us. So people are, you know, it's going to be a really interesting period of in the next 2 years, and, you know, it's the next congressional session. A lot of people are going to try to make politics out of what's happening now because of the presidential elections that are taking place here in the country in 2 years. And it's going to be a big challenge and it's a really fascinating, you know, question. How do people who are undocumented, who are not citizens, who don't have the right to vote, usually don't speak English, and they're having this big old impact on the culture of the country, right? Is how are we going to resolve that contradiction, that problem? And I don't know yet. It's really something that we don't know how the story is going to end, but it's really exciting living through it.
So, Arnardel, just as a final question, I'd like you to address the upcoming years. You've already talked about how the current mobilizations that we saw in 2006 were 10 years in the making, going back to 1996, and were sparked, I guess, by H.R. 4437, a new law that would have made being an illegal immigrant a felony, amongst other things. This year, in response to these mobilizations, George Bush signed a bill that was passed by both House and Senate that authorized 700 miles of new fencing along the U.S.-Mexican border. Mm-hmm. It's called the Secure Fence Act. What can we look forward to in terms of mobilizations, in terms of resistance, in terms of that rebellion that you talked about in 2007 and beyond?
Well, you know, the border fence bill it has nothing to do about a fence. It's about a wall, and a lot of it is electronic and virtual surveillance and different types of high-tech, surveillance of movement of people. It's not just that, but because they concentrate on the urban regions, the metropolitan regions, and the suburbs. They don't really, the people that are out in the desert, not even with their fancy vehicles and airplanes can they get to them, right? But they're just picking up the people who die or the people who are looking for water and can't make it out of it. And the unfortunate thing is the next 5 years have already been pretty much determined in terms of border wall building, prison building, expansion of the immigration police, expansion of the military at the border, the expansion of the border patrol at the border. It's pretty much already set in stone what's going to happen in the next 2 years in terms of expansion. It's done. This last the border fence bill that happened in September, it added another $5 billion to the border, and they're already spending operating budget. It's almost $3 billion a year. So that this was add-on money. It wasn't. So the standing budget for each year is over $3 billion now, plus all the things that they're going to add over the next 5 years. So it's a pretty much a done deal, right? But it's not impossible to stop. It's also not impossible to challenge, and that's what's happening right now. That we're challenging those policies, and we're saying that you can't trade off the rights of any community for any type of reform, and that people are not going to obey any law that's like that. What's happened in 2007? There's already a lot of planning going on for May 1st, so it's going to be a series of marches and boycott work stoppages. They're going to culminate on May 1st. There's all kinds of there's going to be a march along the border beginning February 2nd that goes from west to east, starting in San Isidro, Tijuana, all the way to Brownsville, Matamoros. There's this national border dialogue that we're doing. It's really not just about the border, right? It's about what kind of country do we want and how do we want that country to look like at the borders, right, and the kind of border that we want. And there's the U.S. Social Forum that's taking place in June. There's all kinds of things. It's already we're already looking at an incredible year for 2007. Now, how much of a mass agent that will be? Right now, the government, like these last raids, are trying to send a really big signal that they want to crack down on anybody that's collaborating, supporting, helping, working with undocumented people. So it's going to be a really challenging year. But there's already a lot of mobilization and movement that's being organized and that's already in place, literally starting January 3rd, January 7th. Some of the key dates are already going to start February 2nd, April 10th, March 10th, March 28th, May 1st, April 10th, May 1st. So you have all these things that have already been institutionalized, not because of 2006, but because of more than 10 years of organizing have already institutionalized when we moved together. The difference was this year, the communities moved in all those within those structures, and they completely transformed them. So the potential is there for an incredible upsurge again to challenge whatever comes out of the attempt at Congress. In Congress itself, we've already been told that they might try to pass a law within the first 6 months of January of 2007. And I think that there's going to be a lot of politicking because of the presidential election. That there's going to be a lot of jockeying. So there's only like a couple of small windows where they might try to pass comprehensive legislation, so that people are already poised to demand a series of principles that have already been advanced in terms of what kind of reforms we would want to have, right? So that there's already a pretty deep sense of what we want, communities want. But how we get it, how we force Congress to change its path, it's almost like a climate change challenge, right? Because the climate is so bad that stopping a law, even if we just could stop the law and get the law, would not be enough. So it's a really exciting period to be living in and organizing and speaking with people and the communities themselves. It's quite incredible. And a lot of it is below the radar, right, because we don't control the media. We don't have access to the big media. But if you listen to the so-called ethnic press, the ethnic radio stations, the church groups, the youth groups, the community groups, the word on the ground is that what we know what we want, and Congress is not offering it. And I think that within the Mexican community in particular, we have different about how, and it's not because we choose to be autonomous, but because we get cut off and closed off, you know, from any access to services, including education, health, social, even police protection, for that matter, you know, public safety. That it's not unprecedented, you know, in this country where there's been total segregation of communities, African American, Indigenous, Latino communities, Asian communities, and Arabs, Muslims, South Asian. There's the segregation that's taking place right now is really intense, and it's not going to be without a fight that we get our rights, and they're not going to just give us what you know, we're not going to just take it lying down. And it's going to be an intense period. And really what we're thinking of, you know, to believe, you know, to be really frank about it, is we're looking at 10 to 12 years of this. It's not going to be, you know, 2 years or one law, like I'm saying. We're trying to hunker down for another 10 to 12, 15-year period of trying to figure out how we get out of, you know, the climate change that needs to take place, because of the type of changes and civil rights protections, human rights protections that we need. So it's going to take a long period, and we really, you know, this is also a reaching out to your Canadian listeners, is that we really have to work together on this part of North America, with the Mexicans and the Canadians and all the different communities, diverse communities and nationalities within the Canada and the U.S. and Mexico. We're really going to have to figure out how we network and we actually, through our actions and our solidarity, how we can actually challenge and try to change those borders just by our own practices of solidarity with each other. So I hope that we're able to work closely, and you know, you have an open invitation, you have an open border invitation to come and work with us. And you don't have to actually come to the U.S. to work, you know, to do it here, but you can do it in Canada, just like you can do it in Mexico, you can do it at the border, you can do it in Oakland. But we're going to have to be really creative about how we challenge the stuff that's being put down on top of us in terms of the national security laws, national security restrictions, and the criminalizing, really the heavy-duty criminalizing of our communities. But our hope is that the communities themselves are providing the leadership and the vision, and there's no, it might take a long time, but, you know, you can't stop that. You can't stop. It's the poem that can't be stopped.